Thanks for joining us on another episode of the Let's Get It podcast. I'm your host, Justin Spaulding. Today's guest is George Diekelman. George, I first met him about a year and a half ago. He came to my mastermind. And at that point in time, he had a couple single-family homes, a couple duplexes that he was renting out, but he really wanted to grow his multifamily portfolio, wanted to scale up. I started mentoring him, and 6 months later, the dude started just crushing it. He landed a 30-unit building. The guy did seller financing. He put down 20%. The guy seller financed at a very favorable interest rate. He bought a deal. He bought it under fair market value, I would say. I mean, I did the underwriting with him. And actually, that deal, I remember, he doesn't live too far from me. I said, George, if you don't take this one, I'm going to buy this one. But he's got a great story. That one deal as a 27-year-old, 28-year-old at the time has completely changed his life going forward. And he's actually since bought another small business. He's been in the nitty-gritty of operating his real estate business. And so I'm super excited for George's future. I think you'll really, really like his story, and you'll learn a lot from this episode. Thank you for joining us. George, what's up, man?
How you doing?
I'm glad to have you in the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me in.
So you came to my mastermind. We were just talking about this a little bit before we started filming here, but you came to my mastermind November, December, whatever it was, of 23.
24. No, 23. Yeah, 23, right before the new year.
I had a 15-month break in between there, between masterminds. So you've been doing some awesome stuff since then.
Yeah, it's been I'm just getting started here. I think this is the first full year of entrepreneurship, like full time.
Yeah.
So it's been a...
After leaving my mastermind, how long was it before you closed that first property?
I closed in mid-April of 24. So it took me about 6 months to get...
Not very long at all.
Yeah, not very long at all.
I tell people, I'm like, it should take you less than a year. If you're going out and doing this and actually doing what... And again, like in my masterminds and in our accelerator and all that stuff, our private members group, I mean, I'm only sharing stuff in there that I've actually done and it's tried and true. And I'm like, I know for sure if you're actually going out and implementing this and doing it and being consistent, and really it doesn't take that long of being consistent doing it, you will come across a deal and then it's just up to you to pull the trigger on.
Yeah, just follow the playbook.
How'd you find the deal?
So really I went on the mastermind, and I think the first thing I started out and just getting my foot in the door working like a W-2 job on the West Coast. I was living in San Diego at the time and was just doing like single family duplexes.
Well, you're young, but too, by the way, right? Yeah. 23, 24.
No, I'm 29.
Jesus, you're 29. Okay.
I thought you were way still young. Yeah. That's still young.
You're way younger than that.
But really, the what helped me, and Tim was a mutual friend of ours.
When I first met you, you were 27. Yeah.
So Tim, a mutual friend of ours, really kind of motivated me to get into the mastermind and to start thinking a little bit bigger. Yeah. So I see him about once a year. I'm really close with his nephew. So got in the mastermind and just started kind of running your playbook on finding deals and really...
When you were talking to Tim, what did you kind of say, or where were you at that point in time that the mastermind came up and he kind of pushed you that way?
It was basically he was just trying to figure out, hey, what are you doing next with this? How are you trying to grow this? What's your plan? And then probably 2 months later, he's like, hey, you should really go to this mastermind. I followed you on and off since like 2020, just through social media. And I trust him a lot. And obviously it was like a good chunk of change, especially at the time for me.
Yeah, for sure.
And really I trust him and just no questions asked. And if Tim says something to do and motivates you and thinks it can help. And I pulled the trigger on it.
If you knowing what I know, helping you underwrite that deal and knowing what I know about the deal, that coming to the mastermind is like just a drop in the bucket at that point. Just a nickel now. You're rocking and rolling up there, which we'll get into in a minute because you're just crushing it.
But I think the main thing was just like, you kind of changed my frame of just looking, just picking up the phone and calling.
Yeah.
And really not trying to, before the mastermind, I was like underwriting deals on Zillow and like LoopNet, and it's just like a complete waste of time. Because those deals are on there for a reason,
for sure.
So I just started calling around, and I would just was really trying to find people who have bigger portfolios and that have owned the property for a long time, and that have a substantial real estate portfolio or have one in the past. Because just talking to people is like those folks that have like 1 8-unit and then they've owned that 8-unit for years and years and years.
Yeah.
They think that 8 units worth gold, and they're just, it's harder to have a conversation with those folks.
It's like me as a seller. I'm hard to have a conversation with.
As opposed to the guy who has 100 units or has had 100 units in the past and is slowly consolidating, they're at least a little bit easier to talk to and like having a conversation. So really I was just calling everyone, I knew, driving around, looking up tax, LLC numbers on online, and just calling around. And this one particularly, I was trying to get a hold of the seller for probably 2 months. And then I saw on Facebook this shitty little ad on Facebook with terrible pictures, and I was like, oh, that was, that's the one I'm trying to get a hold of.
They had it listed for rent on
Facebook. So I called that, got the right number.
Love that.
Found out that these guys are big world travelers and they were out of the country for 2+ months, and got a hold of them. And then just kind of continued down the process. And then just trying to like tell my story and like sell myself, because I went to the seller's house and he showed me this filing cabinet and a stack of direct mailers. He had about 100 direct mailers over the past 5 years. And just trying to set yourself apart by telling your story and selling yourself on why they should come to you.
You picked up a deal like that. Leonard Brady, who also came to our mastermind, that's what he does too. He actually just goes through the Facebook marketplace and looks for the properties that are for rent in his area, and then we'll just call and say, hey, I'm actually not looking to rent the property, but would you entertain an offer if I, you know, would you look at selling this thing?
Yeah, because some of these people are like, they've recently evicted somebody.
Yeah.
And that there's sometimes pain there where, hey, I've been doing this for 20 or years.
Just, even if they didn't evict someone, it's just time to move on. They want to travel the world.
Time for move on and just we're done with this, and it's time to close
and
this chapter.
And it's by, you know, and you said there like they had a full, and I mean, I get so much direct mail too that I just toss them. I don't keep any of them. But that being said, I mean, I'm also from the mindset of like direct mail has worked for me in the past too. Mm-hmm. So and I don't do as much of that. I'm picking up the phone by far. That's what I do the most of. And just like I tell other people, but by any and all means is what I tell people. But if you had to pick one, I'm definitely saying pick up the phone.
Same here. And I've done some direct mail. The hardest part with direct mail is like just the consistency piece of it.
It's got to be consistent. It's got to be a large volume for it to work. If you just try to direct mail like 3 properties or 10 properties, like good luck.
Yeah, and you almost need, in my opinion, just to outsource it. Yep. Just pay the money to outsource it.
Yeah.
As opposed to like trying to do it yourself.
Versus like I tell people all the time, if you can get to 100 phone calls.
Yeah.
I don't think, if I had a challenge, and maybe we should do this sometime actually, Joel, as a piece of content, where I just sit there and make 100 phone calls, and it takes, you know, I mean, because I leave voicemails. You know, there's obviously working numbers, whatever. But I mean, if I go through my database, or, you know, if I find new properties, whatever, I don't know that I've ever been able to go 100 phone calls without being able to go out and buy a deal.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to put the fucking work in though.
Yep.
Yeah. George does. Yeah.
And it's just the mindset too, is just like,
how many calls do you think you actually made?
Not that many. Like
30, 50 to 20.
Just in general.
Yeah.
Probably 80.
80.
Probably 80 phone calls.
I'm telling you, you cannot get someone, go out there and try to get. Now, the other thing that I tell that's really important is like what you did. You didn't use, and again, I think as AI gets better, or if someone traded the right AI program or used the tools correctly, I think that they could leverage AI to do this and help them do this. But I get people all the time that say, well, what do they call it? Skip tracing or something like that. And I'm like, but the problem is your that's almost like direct mail, where you gotta shoot it out there and shotgun it out. That's kind of what that skip tracing is, and like using AI to come up with all these lists and everything. Because the difference is like when you actually identify the type of property that you're trying to get, which is a value add, it might be deteriorating a little bit, it might be, you know, in the location you want to be. Versus like skip tracing is just going to give you all these numbers, right? They might not even be, they might include office buildings that you're not even trying to go for. Yeah. It might include storage unit that you're not trying to go for. And you don't know that until you make the call. So if you're doing skip tracing, and that's where people are like, I've made like 250 calls. I'm like, let me guess, you're skip tracing, or you're just buying a list from someone else. Yep, that's what I did. Versus if, like you said, you ran, you drove, you looked on Google, you created your own list and looked up those phone numbers. That's where you made 80 phone calls and you got your first deal.
Yeah, my list was clean. Like it was the properties that I would legitimately buy and want to buy. And like I knew I was on my bike riding around.
Yes, I love it. Like, I love it.
Just seeing like what, because my mind says like I want to hold whatever property I buy now for at least 10 years.
For sure.
Or become, not to say I will.
I've started to underwrite out 25 and 30 years.
Yeah, which is my stuff. Awesome.
And when you do that, it's freaking nuts. It's crazy.
Because you just have to hold on. If you can just hold on for dear life.
And you can look at how many times you can refinance it. And obviously, if you hold on to it for 30 years, you're probably going to do a CapEx program a couple times in that.
Right.
Right? So you got to obviously plan for that and whatnot. But, man, like it's pretty... I mean, the hardest part is finding the deal and repositioning the deal. That's always... Those are the hardest things to do. And so, like, once you're done there, it's like, yeah, I mean, if you can hold on to it. I mean, not to have too much of a cliffhanger, but, like, you know, because I'd love, you know, people are going to want to hear, like, what you've done. But, like, has the one deal, the first deal that you've done, did it and will it have changed your life forever?
Yeah, it will, for sure. And part of it is just, like, the confidence that I've gotten from it
for sure.
is the big thing. And then also just, like, the credibility that you feel, like, even since that deal. Like, for now, if this is one deal, this it'll change my life. But, like, I feel like I'm just getting started now.
Let's go, man. Let's go.
So
Can I dig into that? Is it the success of the deal or is it the fact that you – successfully did a deal that gave you that confidence?
I think
is it both?
Because without the success of the deal, then it doesn't really matter.
Sure.
But I think part of it is just...
I got too excited there to answer the question.
So,
I'm sorry, Joel.
I think it's completely both, but I think it's first is just like confidence. Like I can do this. It's not that hard to do. If you just like put in the work. And then also it just like you have the credibility, like even since buying that deal, I've had brokers like reach out to me.
One deal.
And they
realize you're a closer.
Yeah. And before this, I was just a guy with some single families and a duplex and triplex. And now that, they see and like, I'm on whatever list that they have. And like they are, I've met with a couple of them. They're willing to have a conversation with me as opposed to 15 months ago that I couldn't even get a coffee with them.
Yep. Which is, again, you remember from my mastermind, I'm like, guys, stop wasting your time. Your primary thing, again, should not be calling all the brokers. That should not be your primary thing. It doesn't mean, I'm not saying don't do it, but if that's the only thing you're doing, you're screwed because they're only getting paid when someone, something transacts. They're not getting paid to just field phone calls from someone that's never done anything before. And I'm always like, once you close a deal, you'll have people, you'll have them flocking to you. And just one deal, let alone if it's two, three, four, five deals.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the deal.
Yeah. So the deal came about basically just calling around and just having like met with the wife. It was a husband and wife. They didn't have any children or anything. They're in their 80s. The guy actually was a developer. He built the complex. He had about 200 units at one point. This is his last unit that he had, 30 unit complex.
30?
Yeah, it was a 30 unit. Townhouse style, five buildings.
Yep. I can see it right now.
Yeah. It's just like every person has their own little patio and yard. So this was their last property. This was like their favorite. They told me, I'm not sure if that was them trying to sell me or if that was true, if it was actually their favorite. But just went through, he had a kind of a price in mind. I was trying to pitch him seller financing on it, but he actually pitched me on it that he's like, hey, I want to sell this on a land contract.
That's awesome.
I've done it in the past and been successful with it. It's reduced kind of his tax burden as well, which all these guys, that's all they care about is like reducing their tax burden. So that's kind of, he had a number in mind, and since he's done it, it was within the ballpark. I think where we negotiated more on was the interest rate on that land contract seller finance deal. So he's holding 80% of the note, and then we put in a 20% down payment towards him.
Yeah. So what was your total purchase price on that? And by the way, this George is from Wisconsin, and so this was an area where I don't currently operate where he bought this deal, but I think I'm pretty sure I told you, dude, if you don't buy this, I'm gonna buy it. Did I?
Yeah, you did.
I said, I remember that part of the conversation. I'm like, this is a good deal. There's a huge upside here. You're getting in at a really low basis. There's a lot of upside based on the comps. I'm like, if you don't, you know, you're a part of my membership group, so I wasn't gonna run you over like that. But I was like, man, if you don't buy this, you gotta let me know because I'm gonna make the phone call and I'll pay you a little fee or whatever, and I'm gonna buy this.
Yeah. So I forgot what the.
So 30 unit. I just seller finances. So you put down 20%. Seller held 80%.
$2.5 million purchase price.
Across 30 units. So you're under 100. You're in under 100 grand a door for townhome style.
And
which
then,
is awesome product. So I love that product.
Yeah. Oh, we put $500,000 down.
So how'd you structure that?
The down payment.
Yeah.
So,
because you own 100% of this deal yourself, right?
I don't. It's a family deal.
Family deal.
And so I put in 200 myself. That was pretty much, I went majority all in on this. Yep. I put 200 in.
Empty the bank account.
Yeah, and empty the bank account. Sold all this stock, and then.
You always think when you get to $1 million or $2 million in a bank account, it's going to change. You won't have to empty it. No. I still freaking empty it.
It's like if you're an actual real estate investor, you're always cash strapped. And then my parents put in 200, and then my brother put in 100, and then the structure of it is I get a management fee. Each year. And then also I have, option to buy the 40, the extra 40%, at a strike price from my parents. So at some point I'll own 80% of this.
What'd you set the strike price at? Cause that's pretty creative to be able to do that. Cause then you're kind of capping how much they get. And then you can obviously end up taking the whole thing over. How'd you end up?
So how we did it was just like a 1.2x on there.
You're probably already there.
Yeah, 1.2x and then I think my
exercise that option right now, right?
We did. Yeah. Oh, I didn't already, but it's just like right now it's a family deal. So it's like, hey, if we all
1.2 equity multiple?
Equity multiple, oh, yeah.
Dude, you're so, you got to be
and
there.
And then my dad's like the 2X on the last 10% or whatever. You're
honestly probably at the 1.2 like within a month after buying the deal.
Yeah.
If or maybe the next day if you took it to the market.
So, yeah, at some point I'll own the 80% of it. Right now we're just kind of, it's like a fun family family deal right now and want to continue to grow. And also we're trying to consolidate some of our, some of the single family duplexes and roll it into something bigger as well. Okay. But yeah, that's the structure of the deal. It's pretty simple. It wasn't anything super complex, but right now all cash flow, we're just dumping it right back into the property and reinvesting.
So did you close with any dollars to do CapEx or not?
We didn't. It was more just, hey, this is as much as I want to put in or physically can put in.
Yep.
My dad, parents were, hey, this is where we're comfortable at. My brother, hey, we're capped out. So right now it's just more organic, just funneling all cash flow back into the property. So it's fortunately we can't do as, fast as I would like to turn this, but I'm more cognizant of trying to protect my equity position in it as opposed to, but
what will start to change for you is once you start to realize the upsides of being able to add the value to that property as soon as possible and shrink that time to do it because of what that allows you to do. I mean, as far as how much, nothing's going to protect your equity more than you adding value to the property and increasing the NOI. So the faster you can increase the NOI, aka usually it's the faster you can do the CapEx, the faster you're going to protect that initial investment. Yeah. So like for me, I've completely changed because that's you know, and it's still sometimes a hard thing for me to get out of and whatever that mindset. But you know, like I should take you over to the 64 units we got right in the backyard here. We got three remodels actually wrapping up there today, I think, or tomorrow. I don't know, one wrapped up yesterday and three wrap up tomorrow, I think. But like this one, just fully upfront, like fully funded the $33,000 a door that we're putting in. Now that includes like new roofs, new patio doors, new entry doors, all the interior. But like what that's allowing us to do is we're going to be done with that CapEx project in like 8 months after buying it. We bought it December 23rd. Mm-hmm. Our revenues have already gone up 55%.
Jeez.
Yeah. We've already been through, I think once we wrap up the remodels that we're on right now, and we've got another six remodels starting on, I think those people are out May 21. So starting May 22nd, when we get through all those, we'll be through 42 of the 64 units in 5 months, 6 months. Right. So now the rents are going from between $800 to $1,000 a month up to $1,690. So you do the math on that, and it's like, well, after doing this CapEx, I mean, we're buying this deal for like 8.3 or 8.6. I mean, it's a 12.5 to $14 million deal all day once we're done. Mm-hmm. Now, what I used to do would have taken me 4 years. Like what you're doing, that's what I used to do, and it would take me 4 years, right? well, now it's going to take me 8, 9, 10, maybe 12 months max if we hit a bump in the road, whatever. And then we're I'll have $2 million, my own money in that. I'll be able to pull it all out and go to the next deal and still own that one and go to the next deal, right? We're closing on 54 units here in about 45 days. And that one we're picking up for about $4 million. It also includes a 20,000 square foot commercial space. Mm-hmm. Same thing there. We got like $29,000 a door going aside that we're going to have access to day one, right? I'm telling them, hey, keep these 5 units vacant. I want to get in there. So like 10% vacant already. We're going to get in there on day one or even maybe before we close, start demoing, remodeling.
I've seen some of your videos. You get in there.
Yeah.
The trucks are there.
Yeah, like, we're trying to get
when you're at the closing table.
Because like the faster I can, nothing takes away the risk faster than increasing the NOI.
Right.
So the faster I can get those first 5 units done and get the rents from now, this property that we're buying, I don't know how, but somehow they still have some rents that are in the, there's like 4 rents that are in the 400s yet. Right. And really? This is a great location, by the way. It's a
around
really
this
good
area?
Location. Yeah, it's 20 minutes from here. It's a really good location.
You have rents in the 400s?
There's 4 units. There's like 3 or 4 units in the 400s. The average across all of them is like 606 or 608.
Are they renting a shower?
No. Units.
That's crazy.
I've only seen 4 or 5 units so far. Either way, our cost basis is at a point where like we're going to buy the deal. I've only seen 4 or 5 units so far. Those units that I've seen are actually bigger than some of our, like our own properties are my comps on this.
Yeah.
Right. Because we have 300, 400 units in that area already. So like our own, mm-hmm. my own properties are already the comps. And so I go through it and like, they're bigger. The units I went through are bigger than the comps we have. So, but the thing is okay, go through this. And in my mind, I'm like this, I think on this one, and there's some unique plays here because there's some vacant land where we could add some stuff. The commercial, I think we can convert to like townhomes and stuff. So depending what we do, I think for sure all day, it's a $7.5 million deal to $8 million deal all day easily. Mm-hmm. So again, we're refinancing out like 80%, 90% of our capital when we're done. But I think we have a chance to hit 8.5, 10 million on the deal 18 to 24 months from now if we add some of the things that we need to add as well and whatnot. But but again, you doing the one deal over, it's going to take you 2 or 3 or 4. You probably know ballpark how long it's going to take you. Maybe
probably
3 years.
Take 3 years. 3 years. 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm. So you taking 3.5 years on that, right, to cycle through mm-hmm. your capital, right, and turn that capital, right, turn the equity. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that in 8 months. So to 12 months. So I'm going to recycle my capital 4 to 4.3 times faster than you're going to.
Yeah.
Right. Now that's all because of the speed. And how do you get speed is if you're well capitalized, if you have access to the cash to be able to do it, mm-hmm. where you don't have to just wait and do it out of cash flow. Right now, there's still deals that we're still limping along because I bought them 4 or 5 years, whatever. And they're older properties and things just come up. And I've been structuring deals the way I'm structuring right now for the last like 18 to 24 months, maybe a little bit longer than 24 months. No, like about 18 months actually. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of our new like model, the new way of doing things. But again, it's because it's, if you're well capitalized, you're reducing your risk as well.
And when did you change that? Like
after it started taking me 3 years to get through some of these.
So this was 2 years ago where you really changed.
Yeah. 18 months.
And that was just raising more money on the front end.
Just putting more money on the front end. Obviously that becomes easier because like now too, I'm like, I'm getting to the point where like I'm doing the math on this stuff. I'm like, it's going to get to a point where like I'm going to need a lot of acquisitions just to put my own money to work off of like refis and whatnot.
That's when we were on your mastermind. You were just starting to look more into doing deals.
Yes. Like, so that's kind of when I kind of started
that. You were looking to maybe do a portfolio on the side.
So that's what we're doing right now is like, I think 30 to 50% of what we buy, I'll just be,
you and your
myself
family,
and, close family. I mean, like this deal back here, I think I got, 80% or something like that. 78-82% is mine.
Yeah.
So, and part of it is like, I still want my family to be involved. I like growing their wealth too and whatnot, but we're not going to ever stop raising money cause it's just extremely profitable as well. But I think it's just our structure changes a little bit. The deals we bring other investors in on change. Mm-hmm. I think, we can widen our scope as far as like, size and whatnot. If there's 1,000, 2,000 unit portfolio, I think we can probably go after it. Cause like, as you start to put more of your own money in, if people hear that you're writing $1.7 million into a deal, you have, you can raise a lot of money because you're like, whoa, you're putting in that much. I mean, most people are putting in no money. Yeah. Most guys that are raising money are putting in no money or 1% or 4% or whatever.
And they're just living off the management fees.
Yeah. So when you can raise, when you got money talks.
For sure.
So what was, so where's the NOI at now? Have you grown the NOI? Like how many units have you kind of been through already? And has it been about a year since you bought this deal?
About a year. Yeah. So the first year we did about five.
Okay. Five. So about 1/6 of the property.
About 1/6 of the property. This year we'll probably do another 7 to 8 units. Okay.
So we're about halfway.
About halfway through.
And then as you go, you get more cash flow. So now you can, the next year you can do 12 and then, you know, and then maybe wrap it up and whatever.
Yeah. So we increased the NOI probably 8%.
Okay.
So I think part of that is just getting more confidence to really push these rents because there's lots of runway to go.
Yeah.
And even the first year, we were only at 1.5% vacancy.
Yep.
And that was like, I wasn't aggressive enough. Sure. And it was just more being not, just now I have the confidence where this renewal season to really be aggressive. Yeah. And we have the more capital in the bank now where we're able to turn some of these units from the cash flow.
And you honestly bought right because you could have probably bought that deal and the next day probably sold it for 10%, 15% more than what you bought it for. So on top of that, you've also increased the NOI, right? So you're in a really good spot as far as equity you've got in that property.
Yeah, and we've gotten way faster at turning.
Yeah, for sure.
Turning units and just have because I've never really turned
units
like that in the past. And so just having the basic blueprint.
They're in pretty rough shape or just tired or
they're just tired.
What are all you guys doing to them?
We do vinyl plank throughout, carpets in the bedrooms, new vanities, new mirror, new light fixtures, new paint.
Countertops in the kitchens countertops and cabinets in the kitchens or not?
They're in solid shape right now. So we might do similar to, I think you might've done this in the past where you just change the boxes are in good shape, but just doing the doors. Yep. And then just doing new appliances. So we usually can get in and out with depending on the unit, $5,000 to $7,000 a unit.
That's pretty good. And you're doing a lot of it yourself too. So you're not having to pay $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 to any other labor, right?
So my mother is very well connected and she knows everybody. She knows the plumber who just went out on his own and we're half the price of what we'd pay like a plumbing company. We got the guy laying vinyl plank and then, painting a little bit here and there, but trying to get fully first year really understanding and just 100%. Being in the trenches of
it helped me a lot to be in the trenches.
Yeah. It's just understanding what do we own?
Yep.
As part of it.
Do you ever listen to the Founders Podcast?
I do. Yeah, I just started. I'm a big, I love that guy. And then, I'm a big Acquired. Fan of My First Million and Acquiring Minds. Acquired. And
have you heard of Acquired?
I've heard of Acquired.
That's another one you should listen to.
I like the Founders.
Founders is great. Yeah. The Founders one on Ludwig, Daniel Ludwig. Did you listen to that one? It's a newer one. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Because it talks about getting in the weeds.
Yeah.
So there's a story in there, and I don't need to, it's an hour podcast or whatever, and the podcasts are great. It's called Founders. So the Daniel Ludwig, I think, which at I don't know if it was kind of during World War II, that time, that era, he was one of the richest guys in the world, but very, kind of very on the down low and whatnot, stayed out of the limelight. But he was already basically a billionaire or the equivalent today. And there was a new opportunity had somewhere Panama or something like that. But it involved, he had to get an oil tanker into this area to a refinery or whatever to be able to get and ship out the amount that they were going to be pumping. Well, he took it upon himself in this little boat that he flew down there. He's a billionaire, right? Flew down there. He bought a string and a bolt and a nut and put that string on there every 6 feet, tied a knot, right? So now he went and took the topography, is that how you say it? Topography maps of the depth of the waters, and he went to check that it was right to make sure the ships were going to fit, get in and out. So he spent 2 days just going around to check the depths, and it worked out. He ended up doing it. He then flew back to New York and gave the green light on the deal. So that shows what you're talking about. You're talking about trenches. And so that's why then there's also another one on Founders that I just listened to.
Have you listened to the Raising Cane's guy?
Yes. Yeah. That's another one, right? So he's talking about, the chicken finger business or whatever. Yeah. Whatever.
Chicken finger dream.
Chicken finger dream, chicken tender dream, whatever it is. And but again, trenches. Yeah. You talk about the Citadel guy, Ken Griffin, trenches. And you just listen to some of those stories and exactly what you're talking about. Like when you dive in and you can really understand your business. I ordered that Hardball book that he mentioned in, which one was that? He's mentioned it a couple times, I think, but so I learned, that's where I learned a lot. Cause again, as you grow with employees, you know, you already have done all those positions and everything.
And I think part of it is just like when you have employees and you know what's to be expected and like what, how you want things done. And then also you, if you lose an employee or something, or you lose somebody, they don't have leverage on you.
Yep, for sure.
Or sometimes you can get, if you just outsource from the beginning, you need them more than they need you.
Yep.
And then if someone leave or it's just not working out, and I think you're in a similar situation right now where you can just step in, I've done it, I can weather the storm until we can get someone else in there. Yep. 100%. As well.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. So what are you taking the rents to on these remodels? They were at this and you've taken them to what?
So we've taken, I mean, some of these one bedroom or two bedrooms are probably like $750 and we're getting to $1,000.
Okay. And you're still light there.
We're like still light. Said, once again, it's just like
these townhome units. Yeah. I mean, even up there where you're at, I'm thinking 1200 probably. You can probably get,
It's just once again, I'm getting 1250. And when we have them and we tour them and they're gone, like, and that's another sign of we're light on it. And we're still even raising rents organically. But still
getting the 250 increase. I mean, you know, when you're filling them quick, you don't have much vacancy, which you make up a lot for it there. Because if you do sometimes increase too much, well, now you have more vacancy. And so it's like, well,
it's a game. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. So it's not like you're doing it wrong. I mean, you're doing great.
But yeah, I think right now, just because our vacancy is so low,
we're
in a solid position. But yeah, there's still plenty of room to run, even on the ones that we've turned on future rent renewals and whatnot.
Yep.
That's awesome. Did I miss how many units the property 30, was?
It's 30 units, 30 unit. five buildings, townhome style.
Okay. Townhome style is my favorite too. And you washer and dryer in all of them, right?
No, we don't. That's the one thing where we're looking into ways to be able to do it, because they have big storerooms where we could put it. It's just trying to figure out how we can pass along the water build to them.
Or you just increase the rent enough, right?
True.
I mean, I mean, the thing is they'll rent even faster. Mm-hmm. So, like, 2021, 2022, when we bought 1,200 units or whatever we bought, however many we bought, 1,500 units, 80% of them had washer dryers. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden what I saw was, like, stuff was just leasing so much faster, higher rates than we thought, whatnot. So, like, right now we're turning over, we're doing a big CapEx project on a 96-unit deal and a 88-unit deal. And we're adding in-unit washer dryers. Now, a 96-unit deal is all one-bedrooms, small one-bedrooms. So we're actually trying out a combo machine that's a washer and a dryer in one, because then that way you don't have to do the ventilation.
Yeah. You'll have to let me know. Have you gotten feedback on it yet?
Well, we're just installing our first. Okay. Like, we had to update the entire electrical of the building. Mm-hmm. And so this was an expensive project, but I really, really believe. I mean, it's going to end up costing us like $8,000 a door on this one to do it. Then we got a two-bedroom apartment complex, two-bed, one-bath, 88 units. We're adding a washer and a dryer in there, so we got to do the ventilation one. Now we'll probably spend like $4,000 to $5,500 a door on this one. This one we're going to the regular like stacked machine, just because like there's two bedrooms and more laundry, and I didn't want to mess around with potential problems. So, but I mean, that's how much I believe in it. We're investing big dollars back into it, just because, again, how much faster they rent, right? Which, again, you see those dollars add up, as because like if your team only has to go do one showing to fill it, right? Well, now they can oversee more units, which then your payroll per unit is going to drop. Your payroll as a percentage of revenue drops, right? So you see it in so many different ways other than just raising the rent, which people don't. I'm about the net operating income, right? Yeah,
for sure.
So many. Now, I talk about revenue a lot, and obviously revenue is a huge driver of it, but anytime you can increase the net operating income, whether it's efficiencies and whatnot, it helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I'm curious to see what the retention would be, as opposed to how much longer people stay when there's washer and dryers, opposed to how fast they turn compared to ones that don't.
Yeah, so we use, at the properties we're doing CapEx at, we use realtors to help us lease out some apartments sometimes, just because we have like an excess of supply usually. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, instead of having to, you know, like instead of having like 15% or 20% of our units come available each year, we have like 80% are going to come available, right? So we have, I was talking to a broker who's going to help list some of these and do some showings, get some applications and stuff for us. And she said, it's crazy that you're doing this project, adding washer and dryers and units. I just talked with a tenant who left your property, and the only complaint they had was it was common area laundry. And I'm like, shit, that's great to know. You know, like, that's why. I'm like, that's bam. But I so that's how much I believe in it, right? Mm-hmm. That we lost that person. Now, again, each time, like, someone moves out, just to turn the unit between vacancy, you know, turning it, the maintenance labor. I mean, your average is between, I mean, it depends on if the CapEx is already done, it's obviously a lot less. But, like, on average, you're going to be $2,500 to $3,500, you know, cost to basically remarket it, get it full again and whatnot. You know, the vacancy costs mm-hmm. on it, right? A full month being vacant at $1,400 a month, that's half of it right there.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, if a washer and dryer was in there where she would have stayed, that would have been an extra basically $3,000. So,
yeah. We'll have to look more into it, especially.
Well, and what we're doing is, like, we're offering people, too, the ability, like, in the renewal to stay. Like, they're seeing all the work being done. So, like, some of these, we're getting our full remodel rent at without having to do anything other than add the washer and dryer. Because all the units right out of the gate are getting the washer and dryers. Like, all the electrical's already been put in for it, and all the plumbing's being worked on now. So, like, even if it's an occupied unit, they're going to get it. And if their lease isn't up yet, they just get it for free for another 4 months or 6 months, or whatever, until their lease runs out. But we're having people re-sign right now. It's only like 25, 30% that are re-signing, and they're going from like $1,000 a month to $1,425 because of, you know, the washer dryer and just the other upgrades of the property and whatnot. Now we're doing other upgrades too. I mean, the common areas are going next level, and the landscaping, and adding like a dog park and grills and, you know, all this stuff, but fixing up patios, but new patio doors, new windows. I mean, there's a lot going on there, but
that's crazy.
It's desirable to have your stuff in unit.
Personally, yeah.
I mean, when I was
looking, rent and I, it's like you want to,
you have it in unit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's like you want.
I wouldn't even consider one that's not.
That's when I was renting. I didn't care about anything. I just wanted laundry in the unit. 100%. That's all I cared about. I thought it was gross to have to go to somewhere else and have a shared laundry. I'm like,
and
I
don't it's just a pain.
Right.
Like, it's such an inconvenience. I'm so lazy. Even if it's in the same building,
too lazy
to go up and down and sit there and wait for it. Yeah. And, oh no, it's just
remembering.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. I'm the type of laundry guy that, like, I put some in the wash.
Oh, yeah.
And it might be the day later, I'll put it in the dryer.
I'm
and
the same
then
way.
I sit in the dryer for like 4 days.
I'm the same guy.
Can't do that. Yeah. Can't do that in the common area.
Now, we have loads of laundry that sit in the wash, and then a day or two later, we rewash. It'll get 3-4 wash cycles before I remember to get it out and put it in the dryer.
Well, this is bad, too. But, like, then once it hits my laundry basket, it stays in the laundry room.
Yeah.
Like,
my
laundry room, like... Right. Jamie, you know, everyone else gets theirs emptied and mine kind of just. We have a gal that cleans our house and someone that watches come over to watch crew and whatnot. And there's sometimes my laundry's just like done and someone folded it for me. I know it wasn't. Sometimes my wife does it, sometimes Bryn does it, but. Yeah. It was probably one of those two that just got sick of seeing it there when they were trying to find something, for crew. And so they just did it. But that's the one I hate: cooking, cleaning, and packing.
I hate it.
And laundry.
Hate it so much.
Those are the four things: cooking, cleaning, packing, and laundry. Those are the four things I just...
Do you have someone packing your bags yet?
No.
He's getting
I know people that do it.
I keep it so limited.
Sure.
So I'm to the point, like, when we go, like, when we went to Cabo, I'll pack a bag, and I'm really light. I just did laundry. Yeah. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
At the Four Seasons, you can check what you want clean, and I, like, put it in the thing and check, this is what I want. So, like, I just do the laundry there, and I'm like, worst case is, if I forget it, I'm just going to buy another one.
That's exactly right.
Like, if I run out of underwear and there's no laundry, I'll just go buy laundry and then keep it. I'll go buy two pairs of boxers and just keep the boxers there. I want to bring it back home, whatever.
Right. But that's funny. So what is kind of your current next phase? Obviously, you've got the 30 unit, you're turning them over. Do you have properties that you're on the docket that you're currently looking at trying to do deals on? Are you kind of what's your next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. So right now, at least on the docket right now, is some of these deals that you're having early conversations still, just like the guys that I've talked to before the 30 unit and still interested. And so I have a couple deals that still early on, but I think my main thing is trying to consolidate the smaller units that I have in 1031
one. So that's what I'm saying is, when you consolidate, that's your main thing. You're not going to consolidate them and put them in one portfolio. You're saying, hey, we're going to sell this one, then they'll just all 1031 forward.
That would be ideal.
That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah, it's okay. Not.
So you're not like, are they all under one LLC already or no?
No, they're all different ones. Okay, different. Yeah.
So you're not like saying, hey, we're going to merge all these things together.
Yeah. Mainly just like, I don't want like these single families anymore. They're cash cows. They're great. Yep. But like, it's the longer term vision of having just bigger units and trying to, hey, if I can sell these three properties and roll it into a 16 or 24 unit, like I would rather have that than and then having some more equity.
So those single families, well. Duplexes, are those owned just by you or is that family as well?
I own half of those and then my family owns half of those as well.
Okay. How much equity do you guys have built up in their ballpark, if you don't mind?
I started in 2020 with a few of these, so I probably have, with the ones that I own solely by myself, probably like 180 in it. And then and then trying to either inject fresh capital that I have into it to a bigger one, but it's just trying to have more bigger properties. Because my criteria at least is, hey, I want to 8 units and above, that value add where it's, hey, that's a C property right now, trying to push it to a B. More of that kind of blue collar type in these secondary markets is kind of the criteria I'm looking for.
Yep. If you ever find deals too, because we're in the same area a little bit, and you pass on them for whatever reason, bring them to me and pay you a fee. Mm-hmm. Bring them to me. And
I'll take you up on that. but right now, as well as just like trying to build like just cash flow. So I actually have one of my best friends. We're partnering up. We're trying to acquire small businesses as well. So we just acquired our first small business about 2 months ago. So it's like a home care agency. So we're trying to increase just the cash flow because I want to have cash flow from the real estate, but to be able to reinvest in it and not like be able to solely live off the cash flow and have more cash flow from the businesses where I can dump it all and increasing the real estate portfolio as well.
Is this like, do you own the properties and people live in those properties and you take care of them, or do you
this is like an agency where there's like caregivers that go into people's homes, so it's a very like low fixed cost. And just seeing like more of the aging population where, hey, there's going to be a lot of baby boomers that need help and don't want to go to an assisted living facility, and right now just trying to get operators into the business so that they can run just be more high level financial in trying to do more marketing on it as well. So yeah, me and my buddy were trying to build a holding company as well of small businesses. Cool.
How'd you find that business?
Just biz by sell.
Seller financing at all? Or
no, it's just SBA loan, put 10% down. Okay. Because that was the thing where it's just like real estate, there's just so much capital that's needed where right now I really want to have, I'd rather be the guy who owns 80% of a 100 unit portfolio than own 40% of a 400 or 20% of a 400 unit portfolio. So just trying to get more capital and just the return on investment of a small business and like having more of that holding company is you can have more fresh cash to then dump into real estate.
So what types of returns do you see in the business from the small business?
Well, you only need 10% down for SBA loan. Yeah. So you can get your initial investment back in year one.
Really? That's what you're going to see on this one?
Yeah. That's great. And then be able, but the main thing is just, it's more variables and it's more day to day.
Probably a little bit more headache even? Or
it's
not?
More headache for sure. Yeah.
Who's operating it?
Right now, I'm decently involved in it right now, pretty involved day to day and trying to build the team right now and getting someone in there that can manage day to day and pay for that day to day.
How many total employees does that have?
In the office, there's 3 right now. And then there's like kind of like the 1099 type contractors. Yeah. Or they're actually W-2, but they're like, they don't come in the office. There's like 50 or 60 of them.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's a pretty big shop.
How much, what are you guys doing in revenue?
1.2.
Nice.
So nothing crazy, but.
What's the margins? Like 25%,
30%? 18-20% margin on it.
Yeah.
So that's one thing where it's just like, because after the 30 unit, I was light on cash.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of put it in a corner and then just also just trying to be more entrepreneurial and trying to find ways to get more cash to do in the real estate as well.
Well, when you find the next real estate deal, like keep that in mind. Yeah. Like, okay, how can we, again, the bank could pay for 80% of 50, 60, 80% of the CapEx as well. A lot of times if you're working with the right bank. Right. So, so again, it's just a matter of, it doesn't mean that you have to come with all the CapEx money on top of the purchase price. It's just because, again, we've done that where we come up and we'll just write the check in and we come up with $5.5 million of CapEx, or it'll be $3 million of CapEx and the bank's going to pay for 60% of it. We got to pay for 40%, or, you know, the bank might pay for 80%. Yeah. We pay for 20%. But again, it's just as long as you have access to it to be able to, you know, accelerate that time frame. Because then again, if you can get out of that first initial building you bought, if you can get out 200 or 400 and you're still at good debt level, where, you know, still at a really reasonable debt service coverage ratio, then again, you can rinse and repeat while that deal still pays you.
For sure. Yeah. Equity. And I guess, do you use the same bank, like bankers, or do you just kind of pin them up against each other?
Deals? They know that there's four or five different ones. And again, it's like, it's, you never just want to rely on one, because just like how you were tight on cash, right? There's times where banks are tight on cash or tight on how much they have out there, or deposits are lower so they can lend less or whatever it might be, right? So if you only have a relationship with one bank, and if they go through a 6-month period where it's like, no, we're not, we're waiting until more stuff comes off our balance sheet. Well, you just found a deal, and now in order for you to react quick, right? So like last year I bought a 48 unit deal. I offered about 8%, 5 or 8% less than the highest bidder. I won the deal because I closed in like 34 days.
Which is insane.
So the other group was like 65 days, whatever. Yeah. Well, these people were in a reverse 1031 or something. They had a time frame. Yeah. And I said, okay, fine. And I found out they had a time frame, and they told us that they had a time frame. And so I just offered a little bit less of a price. I knew I wasn't gonna be the highest bidder. I probably could have been the highest bidder, but I knew what was important to them was the time, not that price. So yes, you should have multiple, just because, again, when you don't want to be in a pinch, when you found a really good deal and that one bank maybe is not lending for a 3-month period, 6-month period, 12-month period, because things are just changed right now for them. So, what do you think, Joel?
Got a crazy last question. So we do a bit where the previous guest asks a question to the next guest, and they don't know who it is. So the question for you, which I gotta say is very excited to hear your answer on this one. Okay. If you were a real estate agent, would you rather drive a tricked out Cybertruck or a sedan?
I'm going tricked out Cybertruck. Okay. I'm gonna lean into being a luxury real estate agent.
I love it. I love it.
I like that. That's a stop process. I know a lot of those guys that do really well.
Yeah.
Oh, you bet.
They're on the TV shows and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be my Cybertruck, try to get a Selling Sunset or something.
That was one of the easier questions to kind of answer. It was about this or that. That came from a 9-year NFL quarterback, a veteran quarterback. Yeah,
I mean, that was unique. I wasn't prepared for that at all.
No, I wasn't either. I didn't see that one coming. Uh-oh. He kind of thought about it for a second, then he spit that out. I was like, that's interesting. Didn't see that coming. Now, the cool thing is you get to ask a question for the next guest.
You could do any profession. Doesn't have to be for the money at all, or besides what you're doing now, because ideally they would like to keep doing whatever they're doing now. But if you could do anything that you're doing aside from what you're doing now, and it doesn't have to be about the money, what would you do?
Yep, that'd be a perfect one for next week. So sweet, man.
I'd be a basketball coach. Is there a certain level though?
Would you go pro? Would you go college? What level would you?
I'd probably do
at
college. Yeah, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing now, I'd probably do college basketball coach.
I have a confession. Yeah, I have a confession. Last night at 1:30, I woke up to feed my 10-month-old. All right, I gave him an 8-ounce bottle. And I went back to bed, and the first thing I thought about, I coach U-12 girls soccer, my daughter's soccer team. The first thing I caught about, I'm like, I need to start scouting. The first, so that I couldn't fall back asleep. So it was 2:15. 2:15 or 2:30, I got up out of bed because I had other work to do too that was on my mind. So I'm just like filing all this stuff away. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna do that. So finally I get up, but the first thing I did, I got some water, I got some of my vitamins in me right away, and I'm like, because I'm just gonna be up, I'm not even gonna try to go back to bed. So I've been grinding for 13 hours now already, and it's 3 o'clock. The first thing I did was look at our schedule, see who our upcoming opponents are. I've got the dates. I've got the dates of when the other ones are playing and where they're playing at. I'm showing up, and I'm gonna scout. I'm gonna scout a little bit.
I love it.
And so
we're talking your daughter soccer.
U12.
Yeah.
U12. 12-year-olds.
Whatever it takes.
So whatever it takes. I love it. They bumped us up a tier. I'm all in. People don't realize when I'm in, I'm all in.
And if I had to quit coaching. Yeah. I had to quit coaching my kids.
Oh god, it was not healthy. I love it. It's not. Wasn't healthy for my relationship at all. I love it, but like, it's contagious because like they get to the point where like they get more competitive. They thrive off of it. They, you know, and so yeah, that was the thought, and I did it. So I, you know, 56ers, I'm coming to watch you. There's a couple teams. Like, I'm coming to watch you guys. They bumped us up a tier. I'm like, all right, we're 1-0 right now. We just won our first game, 2-1.
Okay.
We should have scored like 2 or 3 more goals. And honestly, we shouldn't have gave up the one. That's always sports. Should have, could have, would have, whatever. So, but now we're scouting. So we're going to see what people are doing on goal kicks, what they're doing on corner kicks, what their formations are, who their studs are.
I love it.
I'm going to take some weapons away, right? And we'll be like, girls, this is, you gotta, and they're going to be like, how do you know this? I'm like, oh,
I went to, I'm the, putting in the work.
Went to their game this morning before ours. There's the team that I'm going to scout. They play earlier in the day than us. I'm going to go watch them. Sure. We play them later in the day.
Yep.
So we're going to have fresh legs and they're going to be scouted.
And the strategy.
I'm saying this now. Maybe, maybe this is not. I wonder if this is
hold,
frowned
hold
upon.
Hold this podcast tonight.
It's a couple weeks. We got a couple weeks. Okay. So you should be okay.
I hope this isn't frowned upon in that league. But yeah, I'm gonna scout a little bit. So. Anyways, and then after that, that only took me like 15 minutes. And then after that, I cranked out some work. So underwriting some new deals and whatnot at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. So. George, appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you here. And hopefully, you know, I'd love to get you, if you, as you keep having success and whatnot, we'd love to get you in here again, like 8 months, 12 months, 16 months from now, something like that.
Hopefully.
To just like see where this goes. Because again, I keep, every time I see Tim or like talk with Tim, we talk about you. I'm like, dude, all I say is like, I'm so excited for George. I'm so glad that he got to the mastermind and like then executed on it, because like, again, just that one deal, what that does from your experience, confidence, and also like the equity you have and what that's going to do for us, like it changes your life.
For sure. And no, it's just, that mastermind was awesome.
Yeah.
And it really just changed my whole frame of like how to look at stuff. And it's been a huge help going forward. And just appreciate you.
Appreciate you coming, buddy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you guys for watching. We'll see you next time.